When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Mully and Haw. Live and local. Chicago Sports Talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Yeah, I think it just was, it wasn't a clean handoff. And, you know, those guys, and we looked at it and moved forward from it and didn't work out. Obviously, the ball ended up ricocheting forward and, you know, something that hadn't come up but did come up and, you know, worked forward to clean it up.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's your guy, Shane Waldron.
That's ridiculous.
Well, you know what?
That is ridiculous.
Here's what
we got to
talk about.
He says the handoff was
That's
bad.
That's what we got to talk
Come
about.
Come on now.
It wasn't a clean handoff. Who are you blaming on that?
It wasn't a smart call.
Listen.
Smart,
you know,
dumb calls deserve bad handoffs.
We talked to Dave about this about 15 times.
Yeah.
You know, Shane Waldron is talking about it, about bad handoff. Caleb Williams, think about Caleb and his height. He turns around, he hands the ball off to a couple of 5'8". Now he's got a 6'3", barrel-chested linebacker. The place where you hand the ball, like, there's no muscle memory involved in turning and giving a ball to a guy he's never handed it to before.
Fair enough. But also,
it bounced off his chest.
It could have been 6'2", 230 pounds. How big is Roschon Johnson?
He's probably closer to
You know
like
what Roschon
5'10"?
Johnson would have done? He would have taken the handoff the right way, the
and
way they teach you in sixth grade, and carried the ball, cradled it, protected it, and scored from 1 yard out. Well, you know, it was a 1 yard play. It's a 1 yard play. The explanation just drove me crazy yesterday because we had to relive it again.
I know.
And we thought we had gotten through the stupid part of the week. And then we were exposed to that yesterday, and Shane Waldron doubled down for whatever reason. He got bad advice or no advice. I thought the Bears were supposed to be cleaning up their messaging up there. It's been bad. Bad.
You thought we got through the stupid part of the week. That was more stupid, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, I know.
Stupid is as stupid does. Who said that?
That was Tom Hanks as Forrest Gump.
Yes, I think it was. Great movie. Classic. Yeah.
Life is like a box of chocolates.
I wanted to set you up for your Forrest Gump imitation.
My buddy,
anyway.
I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday because it's like, you know, there is Halloween. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about what you give or whatever. So he's talking to a friend of his and he had moved into a nice area. And he said his friend is like, God, you know, what do you give away up there? You know, I mean, my God, you know, people are getting a lot better. When I was a kid, if you got a candy bar, what do you guys give? And he said, well, we just give like a 1 pound box of Fannie Mae. And the guy was like, to everyone who trick or treat. Like, he was totally joking.
Yeah.
And isn't that funny?
It's a lot. That'd be a big one.
Oh, that would be ridiculous.
Oh my gosh, it would be ridiculous. Well, on yesterday, Halloween Thursday, Shane Waldron came disguised as an NFL play caller.
Well, I think he's
and the mask is off.
Slipped.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. I got
is off.
That's good stuff. Let's go to Jerry. Jerry's on the road. Hey, Jerry.
How you doing, guys? First of all, I would like to congratulate Mike Kopech and Joe Kelly, who managed to get away from Ethan Katz and win a World Series. As a White Sox fan, I'm so happy that they cleaned house with the managerial and the coaches and everything. And Mike Kopech and Joe Kelly, congratulations. The second thing is, I think there's got to be something to the thought. I recently found out that Eberflus and Poles and Waldron all have the same agents.
Yeah.
And nobody's taking responsibility because they're in fear for their jobs. So, you know, what do you guys think about that?
So you're blaming it all on Trace Armstrong.
Trace Armstrong. It's all his fault.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm not blaming it all. I'm thinking that the fact is that they're not really coming out and taking responsibility. Because if your coaches take responsibility for the stupid play call, that we're talking about, then, you know, maybe, you know, things go away, like you say. But they just keep on saying, oh, I would do that, and I wouldn't call timeout the play before to set up my defense against a Hail Mary. I mean, there's no responsibility taken by the coaches, and where could that be coming from?
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate the phone call.
I appreciate the thought. Here's the problem with your logic. Why would they be fearful of their job if they all share the same agent? Isn't that mean they're all part of the same cabal?
They'd be less fearful.
And they'd be less fearful for their job.
They would
so I don't
more
think it's about fear secure. Of losing their job.
I don't think it's a fear of losing their jobs. I will agree that Trace Armstrong has had a tremendous influence on this Bears regime because of the general manager hiring the head coach who was – Their collaboration was in part because of sharing an agent.
Yeah.
And I think when they had the offensive coordinator search, it probably helped matters that Shane Waldron was also represented by the same guy.
The best ever was when they had the introductory news conference with the new general manager, the new head coach, and you asked if they had met through their shared agent, Trace Armstrong. And there was this moment of,
it was
where they stopped looked at each other and they went silent, and then they kind of answered the question. It was as if you had caught them with some kind of big mystery.
That tends to come up a lot. It does, and admittedly, it was an awkward moment. But I think I always try to feel. I don't want to feel like a defensive when I say this, but you know that there's sometimes you go into a press conference when we used to go to a lot of them, and you know that there's going to be chances where you are playing a little bit of gotcha, right? That wasn't one of them.
That really wasn't one of them. It was just a fair question.
It was just kind of, hey,
what's
by the way,
yeah.
You know, you guys, know. How did you meet? I was looking for the origin story.
But their reaction was a gotcha.
It was.
Honest to God, it was like one of the funnier moments I've seen. And we used to joke about it all the time.
And it was memorable.
Because it was so over the top.
It was crazy. But I didn't go into that day thinking, oh, I'm going to get them with the Trace Armstrong question.
I remember when I first started covering the Bears, I had come off the Bulls beat, so I was used to watching the NBA, and then I'm on the Bears, and Trace Armstrong was in practice one day, and Vincent Smith, remember that name?
Yeah.
He was a great guy.
Linebacker,
too.
Right?
Good guy. He came in, filled a hole, and his helmet was down, and he shattered Trace's elbow. So Trace, they like straightened out his arm, and he had this kind of big bandage on his arm, and he was continuing to play somewhat. And I remember I was in the locker room talking to him about it, and he said, like, yeah, Chase Armstrong's a brilliant guy.
He's a
really bright guy. And he was telling me, like, yeah, you know, I'm developing this club move. It's kind of like I'm able to use this, I can get under a guy's pad. And I'm like looking at him, I'm like, what about your elbow? And he's like, well, there's a couple pieces of bone in there they'll probably have to clean out in the off season.
And I
was just sitting there like, if I had a paper cut, I would be hospitalized.
You know, we're talking about a guy, he's an accomplished agent, and some would say he's the shadow president of the Chicago Bears, and I get all that. But we should not forget the fact that he was a 12th overall pick by the Bears, and he had 106 NFL sacks, and he played for the Bears, he played for the Dolphins. Dave Wanstead, in both cases, coached him.
Yes.
Then he ended up with the Raiders, and he played about 15 years in the NFL. That's a long time to be an NFL player.
Yeah.
So,
and when he first came in, he was playing with all the guys that were still left over from 85, and Hamp and Steve McClellan.
Tough transition.
And they used to call him Moth because they claimed he lit up when the cameras came on, and he would go talk to everybody.
Like any good agent would.
Moth.
Like any good future agent did.
Anyway, all right, we digress. Bill is on the road. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. Good morning. I think this has obviously turned into the biggest game of the Eberflus era, and I feel hopeful that they got a chance to win. I mean, Arizona, it's kind of like a home game. That crowd's going to be one-third to one-half Bears fans.
Right.
But I hope they don't blow it, because then I do think Eberflus and certainly Waldron's day should be numbered. And I heard what you said in the last caller about
the agent stuff, and the Bears are not the kind of place that are going to fire a coach during the season.
Yeah.
But this could very easily melt down to be like a 5-12 kind of season if they don't turn it around right now.
Bill, I think it's a really good phone call and not an overreaction. I think this weekend does feel like the pivot point of this year. And let's face it, when we talk about the biggest game of the Eberflus era, there aren't a lot of others to compare it to because the Bears haven't really played with many high stakes. They've been always like, well, this is a big game because if they lose it, then the draft order will be affected. Very seldom have we talked about if they win this game, they're headed somewhere that is like in a positive direction. They've got to win this game to keep things going in a positive direction.
There were people who felt they should have changed coaches after last season. Now, that might be that might have been turned into an unpopular opinion by the Hard Knocks campaign, but the reality is that they had, you know, they had some bad things happen a year ago. They had some bad losses, some late losses, and they moved forward. And the thinking was, and I don't agree with this thinking, but the thinking was, if you're going to draft a quarterback, why have a defensive-minded head coach who's hiring a new offensive coordinator? And then if you get through a year and you find out the coach isn't the guy, then you got to go hire an offensive coach and he'll be different than what the quarterback – it'll just – the quarterback will have to learn another system. I mean, there were all those concerns. Now, I think it was in San Diego where they fired a coach after the first year and then the quarterback ended up throwing for 5,000 yards and 38 touchdowns or something. I mean, I'm just saying, I don't know that Caleb can't overcome something like that.
I think he can, Mully. I think we agree with that because I think he's one of those players that I don't get concerned about a coaching change changing the arc of his career.
And I think the very fact that you feel that way, I think that that puts him more in danger. You want to be a part of this
without
thing
a doubt.
Forward.
Well, you're exactly right. And I think what we talked about and you're referencing last year is that the Bears really went contrary to conventional wisdom in bringing Matt Eberflus back. That was the time to clean the slate, theoretically. And really, you look around the league, and a lot of general managers, a lot of ownership groups might have done this, might have just cleared the deck and said, you know what, we've got the number one overall pick. We've got a general manager. We've put together a pretty good roster. We want to get a offensive-minded head coach to grow in concert with this young quarterback. They didn't. I think they ran against the grain a little bit. They did something very Bears-like.
And there was like a really successful former Bear available as a head coach out there.
I know.
I'm not bringing it up again.
No, you're not.
I'm
but you're making
saying,
me miss Jim Harbaugh even more.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. And every time that we hear what we heard yesterday from Shane Waldron, who's calling the plays, and what we heard Monday from Matt Eberflus, who I like personally, but professionally I question, I wonder and remember just how much Jim Harbaugh was available.
It's all legitimate, and it's all stuff to consider, and is a really big game for the head coach. Bill is listening on the Odyssey app. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. How we doing this morning?
Good.
All right.
Good. Hey, I have full confidence in the talent on the field. The defense looks amazing. You can say all the things you need to say about them, and haven't given up 20 points or more than 20 points in what? 12 weeks, something like that. Mm-hmm. The offense looks like it can come together, but I have no in this coaching staff. Mm. You don't have a head coach. You got a defensive coordinator that keeps making mistakes in game on Sunday, and he's not going to turn that around. Poles is going to have to insist that he starts giving up and start head coaching the game on Sunday, or he's got to go. Take care. Go Bears.
Thanks,
all right,
Bill.
Thanks, Bill. He cut out a little bit there, but I think we got the gist.
We got the gist. I think he feels like this is a big game for Matt Eberflus' future. The Bears are not going to fire a coach in season.
Up to this point.
I think we might feel differently as well about Sunday if the second half of the schedule didn't seem so daunting. If things were reversed and the Bears were 4-3 after playing in the division and going through the teeth of the schedule, you might feel a little bit more optimistic about what's ahead. But what lies ahead is a gauntlet, Mully. I don't think that they are ready if they lose on Sunday to take on the NFC North because as we're going to see this weekend with Lions and the Packers game, and we already understand the Vikings have done, the Bears have to keep pace, and that starts and continues on Sunday because it gets tougher from there.
Yeah, I think I have a lot of thoughts on that. We'll get into that as we get closer, but I do think that the familiarity with your division should help them. They played Detroit pretty well last year. I don't know that a split is possible this season, but Detroit seems compromised defensively, and the Bears have a really good defense. I don't know if that can hold down the Lions, but I think it's going to be interesting, especially after Joe just told us that that the Lions only have three outdoor games all year. One of those will be in Chicago later on in the year. That's a good thing to my mind. We know the Bears usually play pretty good against Minnesota. They've won up there. They've split with them most years. The problem is the Flower has never lost a game to the Bears. Don't you feel like the Bears are going to need to figure out a way to beat Green Bay starting this year?
Until they do, you doubt them.
Yeah, it's just the
reality.
Until
they do, it's hard to pick them and see how they can beat the Packers, because regardless of how good their defense is, I think when you look at the Bears offense against the Packer defense this year, you know who leads the NFL in takeaways?
Yes.
The Green Bay Packers.
That's right.
They have more through eight games than they did the entire year in 2023. So this is a different challenge with you, when you're talking about the Packers, because not only are they going to call plays that confuse you and keep them in the game, that defense is going to come after you.
And I don't like the idea of going through a week, Packer week, with Dustin in a Jordan Love jersey.
It's going to be really fun.
It's
going to be really fun, especially because of how it happened. I can't wait for that.
Daryl is in Aurora. Hey, Daryl.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Great show, as always. The first thing I'm going to say is that, you know, it's conceivable that, you know, let's say the Lions win the NFC North. It's conceivable that they can have three teams from the, you know, three wild card teams from that same division make it, but
unlikely, but conceivable. Okay,
right, exactly. But because it's the best division so far. If the Bears can bounce back, you know, I played sports for a long time. I played at the military academy, and my Black Knights are undefeated. So let's see. Hopefully, can keep going. But if the Bears can win this weekend, I think they could run the table, beat the Patriots at home, beat the Packers at home first time in a long time, and then beat the Vikings. That would be four wins in a row.
Really?
All they'd have to do – I think they can't. You know, listen.
What are you basing that
Vikings,
on?
I think
– What are you free basing that on?
Well, okay, so you don't think they can beat the Cardinals this weekend?
No. I picked the Bears to win
but
the game.
There's a difference in evaluating this game Sunday. Yeah. And you're saying they're going to go on a four-game winning streak based on what?
You're saying they're going to win 7 of 8, is what you're saying.
I think the Bears' defense is one of the, as far as their secondary, they're one of the best in the league. I think the Bears,
when they're facing the line of scrimmage, they're very good.
Mm-hmm. When they're facing the line of scrimmage, that is, write that one down. Let's get that cut.
I think they can beat, let's say, the Cardinals. That's going to be, all these, there's no easy games in the pros. We had, like, at the beginning of the season, I was in a pool, and I think half the pool got
everyone got
ousted
run out. They, yeah,
but I think listen,
it was Cincinnati that buried everyone early. Yeah,
I mean, the Bears should have beat the Colts. If you look at the schedule before the season, you say, okay, here's where the Bears are going to win. Here's where they could lose. So let's face it. You know, last weekend was a game that most people would have had. Yeah, the Bears are going to win this game, even though we didn't know how good the rookie quarterback for the Commanders was going to be. You still thought they were a little bit better. So the Bears are going to have to win one of these games down the road that they're not expected to win. I think that, I think the Packers, as good as they are, and they're very, I think LaFleur is one of the best coaches in the league. I think this year, Williams is going to have to have one of his best games as a young pro. I think they can beat him. They're going to have, mentioned earlier.
There's a lot ahead, Daryl. Yeah. Thanks for the phone call. We got a break, but I appreciate your optimism. I just don't share it.
Grody time is next. We'll find out if Mark Grody shares optimism, if he will share it with us, or will he be as usual?
What a great man himself. He is.
We love Mark. Mully and Haw on the Score.
It's Grody time, and that means it's time for Mark Grody with Mully and Haw.
Bears.
On 670 The Score.
got to let it build up. You look at me like I'm nuts.
Let's go.
It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. You know what that music means. It's that one guy that likes that one song. It's our guy. It's Mark Brody. It's Grody time.
Yeah. Good morning, everybody.
Mark joins us on the Otero Hotline, your all-weather tire, Otero.com.
How's it going, Grody?
It's just building up, Mark.
What's happening? Yeah, I know Haw just wants to get down to business.
Yeah,
I know.
He's serious.
Doesn't have time for this nonsense unless there's twangy country music playing in the background.
Don't mock my country music.
Wow.
I'm not mocking it. I'm just disliking it.
He's more the modern country. He's not the twangy country.
Luke Combs, Pandora. Yeah, a little. Yeah.
That's cool. That's good stuff.
That's good stuff. Faces.
That's I don't want to admonish anyone's music. That's not cool to do, and I did it. So yeah. I apologize.
I'm wounded.
Very hurtful.
I know you are.
Speaking of wounded, what did you make of yesterday's tortured press conference?
Well, I mean, I think that it would have been very easy for Shane Waldron towards the end. I mean, there was a certain amount of responsibility that Shane Waldron did take throughout the press conference, and I just think that there was a company line going into this, that they rep, if we're talking about Doug Kramer, we rep the play, we liked the play, we trusted our guys, like they were, that's what everybody's been saying, that is on the coaching staff, you know, going back to Matt Eberflus and some of the assistants, we were confident, man, we thought that we could pull this off, and we didn't, and we don't regret it, but what I keep saying is you're never going to see Doug Kramer carry the football again for the Chicago Bears. I'm not saying he would not ever be out there again blocking. I think that would be silly to extinguish that from your playbook, but this is just something that's not going to happen again. For some reason, they did not want to say they would never do it again, and I don't know if that's gamesmanship or protecting themselves or whatever the case may be is, but yeah, it's just like it would have been easy to take this out. And I'll tell you what would have been easier, an easy way to have us not still talking about this on Friday would have been to, you know, let your offensive coordinator speak earlier in the week.
You know,
I mean, like, and I don't know if that's just the Bears. I'm sure other teams do it, so I'm not necessarily, you know, pointing this as a criticism towards the Bears, but it's silly that they look at us funny when we want to ask these questions this late in the week. I mean, always is an issue when we are nitpicking plays from the previous week because we don't get a chance to talk to the offensive coordinator and to the defensive coordinator until Thursday. So if they want to turn the page, this was an extraordinary circumstance. Maybe make an exception and let us talk to these guys earlier, and then we don't have to talk about it, and we don't have to keep covering the story, and we can turn the page. But that obviously that's not the case.
Did the coordinator blame the quarterback for not handing off the ball correctly? I mean, I'm just saying, I don't know what I heard, because I heard something that, like, I think it was like a spit take I went through when I heard him say that. They'd run the play again. But it was just weird. Weird and odd and strange and strange.
I don't remember the exact words that he used, like right off the top of my head, Mully, but he did generalize it to where he wasn't necessarily blaming Doug Kramer, and sounded like he was handing a little bit of blame, maybe to Caleb Williams, that it was just a bad, you know, it was a bad handoff in general, by all parts. Yeah, I think those are the words he used, by all parts. And it might not have been an ideal handoff by Caleb Williams, but that just goes to the heart of the issue.
Exactly.
That you've got a guy that is not adept, no matter how many reps he's done as a running back in his life, no matter how many times he's practiced it. This is an offensive lineman in the National Football League. It's not like they just turned him into an offensive lineman when he came to the Bears. So that goes to the heart of the matter, that if this was a running back, if it was a bad handoff, a running back or an actual fullback probably would have adjusted, and there wouldn't have necessarily been a fumble.
You know, Mark, I think Caleb Williams could have a big game on Sunday. He finished 6-9 in the fourth quarter after a real shaky first three quarters. Maybe going back home affected him, and he certainly wasn't as composed as he normally is. What did you hear from Caleb Williams this week that makes you expect maybe good things, or what do you expect from him against the Cardinal defense?
Well, unfortunately, there just is not a pattern of Caleb Williams getting off to fast starts. I mean, it's not even that. They've been bad starts for Caleb Williams. But to answer, and I'll come back to that, yeah, I do think that this is a scenario in which Caleb Williams could have a really good game. I mean, yes, they are not a good defense. You know, Shane Waldron kept talking about how, and this was the good stuff from Shane Waldron, about how they are good at disguising and putting players in different positions. So it is something that has to be taken into account for a rookie quarterback. I mean, I think that's the only chance that they're going to have against, like, Caleb Williams proper. But you do have the problems along the offensive line. Arizona knows what's going on. My guess is that they're going to bring more heat, and we have not been able to straighten out who's playing and who's not. And I'll be out at Halas Hall later on today reporting, and hopefully we'll find out about Tevin Jenkins and Braxton Jones and the rest of these injured guys, and see who's in and see who's out. But that has to be play a part, no matter how bad the Arizona defense is. And as for the slow starts for Caleb Williams, and you're right, I mean, like, he finished strong, and that is ultimately what matters. But they do have to figure this out eventually. But I did get a great answer yesterday that I played on the afternoon show in regards to, you know, what exactly has been going on with the slow starts. And, like, we asked Shane Waldron about it, and Waldron, again, gave a good answer because he gave specifics about the penalties and some issues with the connection with center and quarterback and things like that. But Kerry Joseph, the quarterback's coach, finally just came out and said, when I asked him, he's like, he's 22 years old. There's going to be a little bit of anxiety. He's seeing things for the first time every single week that he hasn't seen. And there's no doubt that Caleb Williams had to have been, no matter what he said to us in the press conference, he's still a human being, and he had to have been amped up with all the built-in storylines. And I think that's what's happening to him. You know, the last week's game, that was the Caleb Williams that we were seeing in training camp, quite frankly, where the defense would win the day, and we'd come out and we'd get on the radio and we'd tell you, like, Caleb, you know, was kind of sloppy, a couple interceptions by the defense. The defense is better than the offense. Oh, but there were two or three elite plays in camp. That's what you guys and we all saw last week, that he reminds you, like, no matter how bad of a game he could be having, that there is that elite there, which I stand by, will eventually sprout and show itself on a regular basis. We're never going to look back, but there are some things that they still need to figure out about Caleb's game in general.
Well, I can answer that question. What's gone wrong in the first quarter, it's fairly apparent, and I know this because we were looking for it coming out of the bye week. They are terrible on third down, terrible. Mm-hmm. And they only had a couple third downs. The first one was third and 15, which they jumped, and it wound up third and 20. I don't know, you know, maybe Aaron Rodgers can throw a third and 20 pass that'll work out for you, but there's not many ways of getting around that one. And the second one was third and 10. That was it. They had two third downs, because I was watching to see if they were going to have adjusted during the bye week and they'd do better on third down in the first quarter. They are something like third and 17, third and 20. I keep getting confused as to what their record is on the road versus what their record is on third down in the first quarter. Oh, it's both terrible, terrible. So if you convert on first and second and you get a manageable third down, guess what? You're going to get a first down.
Third and long is a killer for any quarterback, let alone a rookie quarterback. And again, you know, some of it is self-imposed. I mean, last week we just saw some inaccuracies from, when I say self-imposed, I mean Caleb Williams. We just saw some inaccuracies on his throws. So, like, easy plays, like, you know, a throw to Keenan Allen that with green grass in front of him, just a screen pass. Like, it's not like they've overcomplicated things. And I don't think Shane Waldron has overcomplicated things for Caleb early in the game, trying to establish a run game, short, quick passes to make him feel confident. So I guess, you know, and that is incumbent upon the Bears offensive coaching staff to figure that out. Okay, so if that's not going to work, what about this? You know, Caleb Williams also talked about, you know, has talked about a lot about, you know, throws that he or completions that he normally would make. So, you know, some of these are plays that maybe if you do repeat that he is going to be accurate on, especially considering some of them being really simple philosophies and plays that they have been trying to run for him early on in games.
Mark, we only got a minute, but you've been around a long time. You've been around the Bears now to sense what's going on and maybe have expectations about what's going to happen. Do you sense, being around the locker room this week in the building, that this is a team unraveling? Or what do you expect on Sunday?
I did not pick the Bears to win. I am picking Arizona to win. And by the way, my winning streak is over. I did miss last week. I did think the Bears were going to win last week. And boy, were we all close. But I am picking Arizona to win this game 24-21. As far as the locker room is concerned, no, I don't think the locker room is on. I mean, look, all of the potential exists. I know I've heard the word mutiny thrown out there, that they're on the verge of that. I certainly have not sensed that yet. I think that there has been and I guess good, and some of it is our part, the media's part, there has been an obsession this week with figuring out what the fallout from last week's game and all of the comments that have been made on mostly on our radio station from various players, including DJ Moore on the Mully and Haw show. They have spent the week addressing things like that. What we want to keep in-house, what you guys can talk about. So we're going to find out if everybody is cool with what's happened. Let's say the Bears do lose this game. Let's say I am right and the Bears lose and they fall to 4-4. No, I don't think that all of us said, oh man, now it's time to panic. The time to panic would probably be closer to losing to New England at home. If they lose the next two in a row, because 500 in the NFL, that, you know, air quotes, early in the season, I think it's ridiculous to think that somehow, like, that's good, like they're 4-4 and they're crumbling. Now, if it's another chaotic, colossally bad loss where horrible things happen, then it's a different conversation. But if they just lose the game and they're 4-4, I don't think this team is crumbling yet. I don't think we're there yet. There's just too much time to go in the season, and 4-4 is not disgraceful.
Great stuff, Mark.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks, Grody.
Thank you, buddy.
Bye.
That's our guy, Mark Grody, and he's like the Minnesota Vikings. He's now going to lose two in a row. He started strong, as you heard him tell you, but he's going to lose again. I don't know how that happens. We got Bruce Levine next. We're going to talk about Will Venable, or Venerable, whatever way we want to pronounce it. He's the new White Sox.
He's the new White Sox manager. We'll see what Bruce has to say.
Mully and Haw on the Score.
Baseball.
Bruce Levine.
It's great to talk some baseball.
Score Baseball Insider, covering the Cubs and White Sox for more than 30 years.
Bruce Levine is a newsbreaker.
Inside the Clubhouse co-host.
Great being with you, talking baseball.
Bruce Levine.
That's a really good question, Bruce.
See, Bruce asked the first hard question.
With Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I should have told you, our segment with Mark Grody, brought to you by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric, for all the right reasons. 866 Four Seasons. And now we get to our guy, Bruce Levine, who is brought to you by Aturo, your all-weather tire, aturo.com. Bruce, Will Venable, we got a chance to meet him via Zoom. What was your take on what you saw? You know the guy, so you're ahead of all of us.
You know, I know him and I don't know him, okay? Because even after covering him for 2 years when he was with the Cubs, he was always extremely nice and extremely accepting of conversation, but really didn't have much time. He was always a busy guy. The coaching staff under Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer at the time, they were, you know, busy all the time, really not a lot of time for interviews. So, other than spring training occasionally during the year, I didn't know him all that well, not well enough. But obviously an articulate guy that has a great reputation. And I thought the real tell from the conversation was about, you know, year to year, he was looking at his career. He's not looking at the White Sox job as the worst job in baseball. He's looking at it as a challenge with a bunch of young energetic front office people, and he's looking at it as a career.
Why do you think his profile, a former player who embraces analytics and has learned from some very good managers, why do you think the 42-year-old up-and-comer fit the profile more than the experienced manager who has done the job before?
I think they do want to have an updated version of Chicago White Sox baseball that includes analytics, that includes a strong R&D department that is all up to date. I think all of that is a part of what Chris Getz and his people want to do. So when people look at Jerry and they look at an 88-year-old owner and they say, you know, you're living in the past here, he's not a part of that. He trusts his baseball people here. This is a Chris Getz hire, just as Pedro Grifol was a hire by Williams and by Hahn. This is all on them, and he has their support totally. He supports everything that they do baseball wise. So for baseball fans, White Sox fans that don't trust Jerry, I think there's tremendous autonomy here for this front office to do the things they need to do.
And when you talk about a guy that is going to be relied upon for research and development, I mean, he's been through a lot of organizations. He knows how they use analytics. And really, the key for the White Sox is the development of these players. They're not going to be going out and bringing in a lot of established stars, right?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, again, what type of free agent market are we going to have, Mike and David? What type of waiting around for players to fall through the cracks? The White Sox are not going to be signing $100 million ball players. They're going to be doing exactly what they did last year. They're going to hire the Youngs. They're going to hire the Tommy Pham's, people that can help them get better and people that they can flip at the deadline. That's a part of any rebuild. This rebuild, unfortunately, is starting over again after 121 losses. There's a full team offensively that they have to produce somewhere. They have to, you know, this as much as they've done pitching wise, which is really their first order of business last year, and I think they've come up with some really good young pitching in the organization. They have to do that with the offense this year coming up. It was just not a major league roster offensively at all.
So, Bruce, you're going to San Antonio next week to cover the GM meetings, and I just wonder, as Chris Getz gets ready to go there as well, will he be trying to lay the groundwork for a future deal for Garrett Crochet, for Luis Robert Jr.? What can he get accomplished next week?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, we saw Jorge Soler traded yesterday, okay? Yeah. I mean, so I think trades happening right away is – certainly something more than you're going to see what's free agency. Free agency is going to take its time. Certainly the Cubs are going to be waiting to see what Bellinger has to say here very quickly. But the reality of the free agent market establishing itself, that's going to take a while. I think teams that have young players that they have duplications for will be interested. And I think the White Sox will be at the forefront at the general manager meetings of teams voicing in some of the similar teams that were talking to them at the trading deadline this year. And more that now that you have Crochet two more years at a very favorable cost, again, they're going to be looking for 3-4 outstanding players from another team. Are they going to hear the right names? We're going to find out. I don't know. I don't know the timetable on that. I think hearing the right names from all the work that they've done behind the scenes on other teams and the availability and the credibility of those players, I think that's what's going to count.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, Bruce, just because I think there's going to be some action. I don't know that they will make that move now or they'll wait till the start of the season, but I feel like Crochet will be traded. I'm not sure about Luis Robert. I've heard a lot of people thinking that he needs to kind of build up his resume a little bit more before you could get a lot for him.
Well, I think you're right. I don't know about resume. I think trust in that he's healthy enough to come to a team and not break down. You know, he's had two major breakdowns in his career, but only 2 years ago he hit 38 home runs. Those type of players don't necessarily fall out of trees. There's a lot of talent there. We didn't see the timing and the hitting that we saw with Robert in the past last year. He was off. He played enough games after he came back from his injury, but other than the good playing on defense and stealing bases, his timing offensively was just way off. So we'll have to see if a new year brings a new player, but it's going to be difficult for other teams to be able to project what they're getting in Luis Robert.
Great stuff. Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce.
All right, guys. Have
safe
a great
journey.
Weekend.
I thought you were going to ask him if he was going with the general manager when you brought that
no,
up.
No, he's Getz. Not going. He's
Bruce
independent
Chris
journalist.
Going. I know he is.
9 to
I'm
11,
saying,
Saturday mornings, inside the clubhouse.
He's also, he's a great reporter. That's
yes,
a good
is.
Way to Getz stuff.
Yes, he is. Okay.
We should tell you this segment on The Score brought to you by your local Ford dealers. Shop now at buyfordnow.com. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of The Score.